This podcast is made possible by Optimizely. Optimizely is the leader in progressive delivery and experimentation. Our platform includes feature flagging, progressive rollouts, and A/B testing. We help your teams release software quickly, then test and learn in production before rolling out to all users. Using the Optimizely full stack platform puts product managers at the center of the product development process, allowing you to de-risk big ideas, make bold bets, and build better products.
Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Very simply put, product market fit is how well your product sustainably actually satisfies your customer or market needs, right? Seems very easy. I think we just assume, yeah, a product is out there, of course it's doing something for the customer, right? And is satisfying a need that's not met with something else already. And the sustainability part is very important. Like, it has to be sustainable business, not like a money wasting business, as I'll come to later. It has to sustain itself, you be able to provide this service constantly to your customers, right? So this is a very simple definition, but it's not as simple as it seems. And you know, as you go in some of the case studies later on, you'll see that it actually takes a lot of effort to find the right value proposition for your product, the right growth hypothesis, to actually make sure you're meeting your customers' need and you have a product that's sustainable and growing and scalable, right? So first of all, how do you know you find it? So when you have a product market fit, your customers love your product, right? They want to try it out. They actually want to use it on their own. So you don't have to spend like, you know, a lot of dollars or like, you know, send them like a million emails, hey, try this product out. They naturally gravitate towards it because they know it's going to do something for them. If you don't have a product market fit, no matter what you do, yes, you'll get some people to like try your things out, but it's not going to be something that continue to use on a repeat basis. When you like a product, for example, if some of you use Uber, right, you try it once, you're like, yes, it actually helped me. And that's when you feel compelled to use it over and over again. And then you actually retain as a user and use it over a long period of time. It's not like, you know, you use it like a couple of times. Yeah, that was interesting, like really cool, like game, but it's gimmicky, you know, like, for example, like, you know, Groupon for the longest time had this problem. It was really good at first, like, yeah, you could find some deals, really good, you know, discounts, but it was not something that a lot of customers sustained using over a period of time, which actually made it not so sustainable and also did not provide a lot of value to the customers. So these are the top three things you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about product market fit. And this is the kind of product all of us aspire to build, where you know customers are wanting to use it over and over again and it's actually drive repeat usage. What does a product market fit look like? A product market fit happens when customers have this unmet need and your products can actually fulfill that. For example, you know, how did WhatsApp come about? Texting was not free. A lot of people had data, but they couldn't like text anybody. They had to pay extra for SMS, right? And when it came to international calling and texting, it was actually very expensive. So there was this unmet need for people to communicate with their loved ones all over the world. Yet, there was not a cheap or free solution for them to do that. And WhatsApp came, solved that problem, and now it has billions of users globally, right? And really high engagement, one of the top products that Facebook has these days. The second example is Spotify. A lot of music services existed before, but what Spotify was able to do is actually has a super large catalog, which others did not have. So sometimes, you know, what happened is like, you know, customers who use like, you know, real networks, yeah, they have some songs, you know, then go to another music provider, they have some other songs, but the catalog wasn't encompassing everything. So that was an unmet need. People had to use different, a lot of products. Second thing, not other music providers had a good way of doing music discovery. One of the key selling points of Spotify is it actually makes music discovery super, super easy. When you go to the UI, you can see like, okay, you know, here's a mix customized just for you to discover new daily, right? That is their USP over and above any other music service, and which is what is driving their market capitalization to super high right now, because that's what it does way better than other music service providers. and, you know, solves a real customer need, because not everybody has a time to, like, you know, try different songs and see which ones they really like. They just want to go in and listen to your music and hopefully find something they like. And Spotify, with their algorithms and, like, you know, machine learning, they actually solve the problem, match you with the right music that you want to listen to, right? The third example, and this is an example I wanted to call out. Like, this is not a whole product. This is just a feature in a product, right? So, you know, when we talk about product market fit, it's not about, like, oh, I need to build, like, this huge, like, WhatsApp-like product from scratch. Like, every single feature that you build, every single, like, you know, additional things that you add in your product could lead to product market fit. For example, you know, the smallest example is now you can check in and have your boarding pass in your Delta app, right? And why? Because it actually solved an unmet need of, like, okay, if previously I had to, like, go print out this, like, boarding pass, it was painful. Like, sometimes I lose it, then I, like, you know, going through my bag, like, where did I leave it? And it's very simple. The phone that's already in your hand, you can just scan it and move faster. And it's efficient both for Delta, because it's, like, moving the queues faster. It's also really fast for the customers to go through and not have to deal with, like, you know, all the problems that come with a paper request. And with that, they actually make their product more sticky. Not that, you know, I'm going to start, like, you know, buying all my flights on Delta just because they have, like, a boarding pass solution. But now it gives me a reason. So next time I fly Delta, I download the app. They can use push notifications to send me, like, hey, by the way, we have this sale going on. And drive more of a relationship with me through this small feature that really satisfied my need, right? So this is an example of a very small feature that can also still drive, you know, customers to come to you, even though, like, you know, it's not an example of a whole new product that, you know, that you have to go build as a product manager. So there are two sides of the problem, right? So Groupon had merchants, right, who are giving these discounts, and their customers who are, you know, wanting the discounts. And the value proposition to the merchants was that, you know, once these customers, you know, a salon, let's say, like, you have a 50% off salon, they come to your salon, they become a repeat customer, right? And what happened that it wasn't happening in a sustainable fashion, these customers were just looking for discounts. They did not become loyal and drive, you know, repeat sales on these merchants. So Groupon wasn't able to get sustainable deals from many of the merchants, and these deals and ended up so that the lot of deals they got, they were not attractive to the customers. So it was not sustainable to keep high quality deals going for these customers, right? So it actually led to that problem. So here are the examples of what it does not look like, because a lot of products have failed and we can learn from them. Number one, Google Plus. The biggest reason was there was no unmet need to be solved, because there was already a player, Facebook, which was solving the unmet needs so well, and there was no need for me as a customer to, like, oh yeah, why would I use Google Plus? I have Instagram, Facebook, whatever else, and my needs are being met. And obviously, you know, add to the problem that, you know, my friends, the network effect, were already in Facebook. And so, like, you know, like, I can talk to, like, five people in Google Plus, or I can talk to, like, thousands of my friends on Facebook. There wasn't a value proposition for me as a customer, right? So, you know, had they invented other ways of, like, making it, like, more useful, you know, to their users. For example, you can see Snap. Why did they do well? They actually found this unmet need of, like, people want to share stuff, but they don't want it to linger forever, right? So I think they saw, like, that particular need of, like, sharing in the moment of where things don't become permanent, and it's a more casual thing, and they were able to sustain it longer. Second example, Windows Phone. So I think they actually found a really cool area, niche area. And I say that, and I actually worked in Windows Phone, I actually worked in Microsoft at that point in time. So, like, you know, all credit can come to me as well. But so they found a really good unmet need. You know, phones were not, like, you know, Office apps did not work well on, you know, iPhones and, like, you know, Android phones, right? And a lot of people want to use Office when they're on the go. Like, almost everybody here uses Office in some way, shape, or form, right? So I want to create my Word documents, I want to review my documents, but I can't do it on the go, and I need a really good, like, app on the phone to do that. Yet, that was not a reason big enough for customers to use Windows Phone, because there was no app ecosystem, which is actually even bigger need for the customers on the device. Right? So there's an example, like, yes, you find a niche, there's, like, a small unmet need, but it does not fulfill the rest of the conditions to be true for a user to actually, you know, use that as an option for them. And the third example is MoviePass. So I don't know if you guys heard about MoviePass. It's a subscription service. You can pay, like, $10 and, like, watch a new movie every day. So again, people love discounts. And every time you have a product where you're like, yeah, like, here's a free stuff, here's a discount stuff, they will gravitate towards it. But it was not sustainable for MoviePass to actually fund these discounts, because the theaters were not giving them these discounts, because it's not profitable for these those theaters to have this kind of a model, right? So in a way, like, yeah, obviously every customer would love nothing more than getting discounts and cheap stuff, but how is it going to be sustainable? How can you actually make a business out of it that you can actually continue doing in the long term, right? So that was another example of a product that did not do as well because not sustainable, even though, you know, obviously there's always an unmet need of me getting free stuff, right? I can always get free stuff. Every day you have so many like seats in your theaters that are going unfilled, right? Why don't we match you with these people who have like, you know, paid for the subscription and like, you know, fill the extra seats, because it's a fixed cost to you, right? It's not going to cost you like, you know, 10 of your like rows are empty. If I just put like more people in it, it will work out, right? But that value prop, like, so they were solving an unmet need, but actually they underestimated the demand and supply side, where a lot more people were interested and they just didn't have enough seats for those people, right? So they were losing revenue because otherwise these people will be paid customers, right? So I think that is what, like, that's why it was not sustainable, where you have like two-sided marketplace. It's very important to think of how much demand you're gonna get, how much supply you're gonna get. And I think what didn't help, what was the final straw on them, I think they had a data breach issue and they just couldn't recover from that. Given the fact their business wasn't very strong anyway, they just did not, like, they just ceased to be, right? That was the case study example on MoviePass. But it was like known long before that they're bleeding money because they cannot sustain giving so many movie like viewing options to customers for just $10 a month. So what movie theaters did, they pulled back or they offered their own loyalty rewards points and they gave them other stuff that, you know, MoviePass couldn't give, like, which is like popcorn discounts and so on. So they were not able to sustain the interest of the movie theaters to continue running their program, and they actually paid out of pocket and they ran out of money. Right, so you have to be sustainable, you have to make money too, right? You can't just continue giving free stuff to people. Because, yeah, free stuff, there's all this demand for this, all this unmet need for free stuff. Unmet need doesn't mean like, you know, customers have to come and tell you like, actually, I would really like Alexa so I can play music using voice, right? So I think that's something you have to determine. And that doesn't mean like, you know, you rely on customer service to tell like, oh, can you please tell me what, you know, needs would you like to be met in your movie viewing experience? Or you know, how would you like to be like, you know, like social media? Like, how would you, a lot of people don't have the vocabulary or, you know, the clarity of mind to know what they need, right? This is something you have to tease out, right, from their behavior, like what are they lacking, what are the problems they're facing, and how are they solving this problem today, and is there a better way of solving those problems, right? For example, I love to like walk into my house and say like, yeah, let there be music, right? And you know, nobody was solving that. Customer for not getting saying like, no, I want a smart speaker, and you know, I want it too. But over time we realized that, you know, voice is such a great interface of actually doing things because it's hands-free, eyes-free, and you can do a lot just with your voice. And if there was a service that actually could use your voice, do natural language processing on it, and redirect your intents to actual actions on Alexa, that will be the thing, right? So unmet need does not mean that, you know, we ask customers and they can actually in words describe what they need, but it's something that comes through understanding customers, where they face problems every day, what is your core expertise, right? And whether you can match those two things and bring something to the market for the customers, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about that because I think that's a really good question you asked. Like, how do you know what is an unmet need and how do you like find it out? So, but just before we go there, I wanted to talk about why is this important? So I think clearly, number one, like if you don't have product market fit, you will fail, right? As a product manager, as a product leader, right? So number one thing, like your customers will not be happy. Yes, they might try. Like how many of you actually tried Google Plus? Okay, a few hands go up. How many of you guys like actually continued trying Google Plus? No, because you're like, yeah, I tried this. There's nothing here. This, you know, it's just like Facebook. I couldn't do anything more. So why be here? So they continue to bounce off. And then let's say Google were to spend a lot of money on marketing. I think they did to some level of like, you know, doing advertising, customer acquisition, like, you know, ads or like, you know, TV commercials or whatever it is. All their money just goes to waste because yes, you can continue driving hundreds and millions of people to try your, like to your website or product, but those people will just bounce off. So you just wasted all this money and there is no way you can scale this product to continue to have like millions of like, you know, millions of billions of like active users, right? And then as a PM, you feel super dissatisfied because you created something that was not useful. So you just waste everybody's time, right? So that's why it's very important to make sure you actually have a product market fit. And that's when you go about scaling the a business, because if you try to scale the business, which is like, you know, pumping a lot of money, acquiring new customers, it's going to fail because customers not going to use it, right? It's more important to get like a 5 customers to really, really love the product and then, you know, try to get the next 100,000 customers versus getting 1,000 customers and then none of them liking your product and then bouncing off and then fixing the product and trying to convince them to come back, because that almost never happens. It's actually way more expensive to get customers who have already bounced off to come back than completely new customers who've never tried it. So where do you start? So I think the number one thing is we have to find that one insight. What is the biggest customer pain point that is not being met by the current solutions, right? So I gave you the example of WhatsApp. The founder's like, yeah, like I have data on my phone. Why am I still paying for SMS? You know, why am I not, you know, being able to like, you know, call people using my data on the phone? Why do I have to, you know, use my carrier's calling service and pay them like, you know, dollars and dollars per minute? So I think that's where like you find a customer pain. And there are multiple ways of finding customer pain, which is like, first of all, like a lot of us, you know, a lot of startups get found because the founder themselves found something to be really painful. Other times you find, you know, customer pain because you understand like, okay, this, you know, I work in this area. For example, like I, you know, right now I'm a product manager in Alexa. I lead a team of product managers, marketers, and operations. And you know that, okay, this is the general kind of problems customers face, and this is the technology that now became available, so I can solve this. Here's an example. So how many of you guys use Alexa or OK Google? And how many of you have multiple devices? So I don't know if you noticed this. In earlier days, when I got my OK Google or Alexa device, every time I set up a new device, I have to say, like, voice train it, right? So I have to say, like, Alexa 5 times or OK Google 5 times. And then I'm like, you know, as a product manager, you're thinking, like, why do I have to do this every time? You should just know this is, like, you know, my email address and this is my voice profile. Why do you have to ask me to train over and over again? And that's what we did exactly. So now OK Google and both Alexa, they actually save your voice profile in the cloud. So every time you set up a device, you can just sign in, and it remembers who you are, so it doesn't ask you to train that again. So these are like where you find out, like, you know, where the pain points are from being in your area and, like, you know, just experiencing the product yourself, and matching that with, like, what technology is available today or in the future that will solve this, and then finding that, you know, pain point and, like, building a solution on top of that. So once you have the insight, you build a hypothesis, like, what is the value proposition to your customer? The example I just gave you, which is like, you know, saving your voice profile, like the value proposition is like, you know, if you're looking at a setup funnel, like, you know, I buy a new device, you know, Alexa or Google device, and, you know, I like sign in, then have to train, and a lot of people actually drop off. Let's say 20% of the people drop off, right? They're like, oh, I don't have the time for this. I'm in a noisy environment. I can't train my like device right now. So you would actually, your value proposition is like, hey, if we build this feature, we'll reduce the drop-off by 20%, right? So that is your value proposition. The next step to that is, once you have the value proposition, you launch the product and you measure, did that actually solve the problem? Are people still dropping off for other reasons? Or, you know, this was indeed the problem they're facing. They actually found value in your solution and they're actually using it, and, you know, the drop-off is gone, and now you have 100% of the people, you know, getting through setup and, you know, using your product, right? So I think scaling and product market fit are actually like steps. Number one, you find product market fit. Number two, you scale, right? So this is more focused on like finding a product market fit, like, does it actually solve the problem, right? Yeah. For example, like, if I build this feature, it will solve this problem for the customer. Once you solve the problem for the customer, that's when you're like, okay, now that everybody's happy, I think I should acquire more users so they can benefit from this product, right? So scaling is actually the second part of it. You have to make sure, like, you know, that market is actually large. It's not like you solve the problem for 5 people and you're thinking that it's going to be scalable to 1 million people. Hopefully those 1 million people have the same needs as these 5 people, right? Otherwise, like, okay, only 5 people actually need it, right? If you build, like, you know, a custom thing for your cat and, you know, only your cat likes to use it, too bad, like, you know, perfect product market fit for your cat, but like it's not scalable to other cats. I'm just making an example up. So yeah, so there is no fixed number of, like, you know, if you're really lucky, your first answer is the right one. If you're not, like, you just continue. I'm gonna come to a case study later on that talks about like the different stages of, like, you know, how companies go through to find that like fit, right? And it's not like a linear process, right? It takes a lot of time. Like, you find one problem, then you optimize for the next step and the next step, and then you find the right optimization, then you're like, okay, this is good now. Now I can go run with this, right? people are trying your product. First of all, like you, when you tell them like, hey, I have a product that can help you send text messages for free using your data connection. And if people are trying it, that means like there is an unmet need that your product has a value proposition of solving. Second, once they try your like WhatsApp solution of sending SMS, if they continue repeatedly, like continue trying it, then you know that it's actually bringing the value to them. And this is where you're finding like product market fit. And then you'll see really high retention where people continuously, week over week, try your product, right? And then you know like, okay, I built something that is useful enough that people want to use over and over again. And obviously you can like couple that with like, you know, NPS surveys, like how happy you are. Like, so I think there's a stat that like, you know, if you just search this, like this is a stat that's floating around. If 40% of your customers say that their life will be different if they didn't have this product, that is when you like ultimately have found your product market fit. Like 40% of people have to be net promoters of your product to feel like, yes, this is solid and this is where you can kind of stop, like in like continue optimizing, don't stop, because like, you know, things keep on changing, competitors keep on coming, new market conditions keep on happening. But that's a place where you can feel like reasonably good about it. Like, okay, now I feel I'm in a place where I can scale this and I won't be losing money. And I think a very cheap way to think about it is like, you know, like retention leads to LTV, which is your lifetime value of a customer, right? And your cost of acquisition is like how much it takes for your customers to grow. Let's say you had to pay $10 for an ad to get the customer to come on your site. But because they use it so much and spend so much money, they actually make you $20, right? So 20 minus 10 is positive. That means that's a place to scale because you're making $10 per customer. Here's another example. Let's say you take $10 to acquire a customer. You spend $10 on an ad, get this person to come to your website, and they only spend $8. So you're spending minus $2 per customer. Clearly, your business is not sustainable because you're only going to lose money, right? That's another way to think about, what it means to have found the product market fit. That customers are going to stay for such a long time and spend money on it. And the fact that it actually pays for the customer acquisition cost. And sometimes, you know, like we talk about, like a lot of products don't make money per se, but like what is the equivalent? Like, you know, they're seeing so many ads that generate X amount of revenue for you or other ways, right? Or some companies just don't care because they know eventually they will make money because they found such a great product market fit that they will continue having this super high retention. For example, Facebook did not, like they still don't charge any money, but they did not have like a huge ad revenue for the longest time. They didn't need to make money because they knew they had such a strong product market fit that they just had to flip a switch and they will be able to make money anytime, right? So it really depends on like how you think about your product. So this is what I was talking about. So it's actually not like a one-shot process, right? So basically you start off with some insights like, oh, I believe like customers will like to have a solution that does X. And then you identify what is the unmet need, what is the value proposition that you're going after, right? Which is like, you know, my value proposition as WhatsApp is I'm gonna let anybody send a text message without any additional money apart from like the data connection or Wi-Fi connection. And then you actually have to launch the product and see the metrics. Do the metrics validate your hypothesis, right? So you launch this product, you decide like, okay, if people can send, you know, they'll be really happy and they'll use it over and over again. Are you seeing that? Yes, you're seeing that, or no, you're not seeing that. Then you draw the next set of insights from that and like continue refining your product market fit, right? So that is how you think about that. Like, you know, you don't need to always make money, but if you find like a 1 billion people using your product, you know that you found something, like there's definitely product market fit because that's very, very rare. And you like, if you were to do some estimation, like, you know, okay, if I start showing revenue, like, sorry, ads tomorrow and like generate X amount of money, you know, I'll only lose X points in retention. It's still gonna be sustainable business, right? So I think it depends on what is the hypothesis for your business. Like, you know, like a lot of startups don't make money right away, but they get like, they really focus on growth and having a really strong product market fit. And then, you know, they turn on the switch to like whenever they're ready. For example, like I was telling you guys about Facebook, they did not make money for the longest time, but they had such a strong product market fit. So when they did start showing ads, you know, like their numbers are like, you know, growing double, triple digits year over year, right? So that's the other way. Like you can tell like, you know, even though like in the short term, like you're not making anything, but that's by choice. Versus when you do experiments like, no, if I start showing ads tomorrow, will I still maintain the retention? Yes, and then you continue building on that. I think it's retention, right? Like, are you solving customer problem? Are they coming back over and over again, right? I think that is the more important thing, because if customers or people find something really useful to the degree of, they are willing to pay or do something to continue having the service, right? Whether they're willing to view ads or whether they're willing to pay money or other ways of monetization. But as long as you know, like, customers are finding value in it, right? Which they can, like, you know, offset by other things. That's what shows you. So it depends on the goal of, like, your product and service. Is it really to make, you know, another example you could give is like, okay, a lot of people use Alexa. Are they becoming new Amazon customers? Are they spending money there even though they're not spending money on Alexa, right? That's one way of thinking about it. So I want to actually take a real example of like how it's actually not a one-shot process of finding product market fit. It actually is something that you achieve over time. So let's talk about when Zappos was first started in the 90s. Their hypothesis was customers want to buy shoes online and brands can directly send them the goods, right? What they call dropship. So their model was a customer goes to a website, places an order. They tell the brand that, hey, order has been placed from your warehouse. Go ship this particular shoe to this customer. Here's the address, right? That's what their model was. And, you know, they built an e-commerce website and, you know, starting selling to customers and so on. Right, so I think that was the number one hypothesis. And they're like, yeah, this is actually working, right? They made a few million dollars in the first couple of years, and they were able to validate the hypothesis that customers actually want to buy shoes online. Because, you know, obviously, you can't just assume, like, you know, a lot of people are like back in the 90s, like, worried about fit, you know, I've not seen this product, how can I just buy it, and so on, right? So that was their hypothesis. They found, yes, there's something here, but not quite, because they were only making billions and they felt like the opportunity was much, much bigger. Then they realized that because they were doing this model where they asked brands to ship directly to the customers, they were not getting a lot of brands interested, because brands didn't want, like, oh, you're sending me like one order and I'm going to send this one, or I can send it to this distributor and send them like 500 shoes and they can continue selling on the shops, right? It was more attractive for brands to not do what they call drop ship model, but send it to like a distributor shop. And as a result, Zappos wasn't getting a lot of variety and options, and people were not coming to the website. They were like, no, I want to see these other, like, you know, whatever, like Nike shoes. I go to my store, they have 20 types of Nike shoes. Your store only has one, or actually not even, because Nike doesn't want to sell it to you guys. And then they realized that brands don't want to do dropship, and what they wanted them to do is like build your own warehouse, buy it from the brands, and ship it yourself. Right? So they're like, okay, fine. We're going to build our own website, like warehouse, and take the risk of buying all this inventory. If it doesn't sell, it's my risk, right? Instead of the brand risk. But then what that enabled them to do was like go after any brand they wanted, and the selection grew multiple folds, and so did their revenue. Their revenue actually went like 300, 400% from that time on, right? So this was the next thing. So they're like, yeah, found my product market fit. I can sell shoes online. I can have a warehouse. But that's not where it stops. They actually realized that, you know, they can, you know, customers were not happy because they were getting really poor service from the brands for dropship. So right now they were in a state where they were doing dropship and they were also shipping from their warehouse. But the customers who were buying dropship, their experience was not very good because brands will frequently lose their orders or, you know, not ship in time, and they had a lot of problems. But when they had their own warehouse, they can control when it ships. They could control the number of days it takes, right? So they actually took a 25% revenue hit, which was their dropship business, completely closed it down. And they put all the inventory, everything they sold in the warehouses, and they decided this is the way for us to go forward, right? And in the long term, they saw really high loyalty and customer retention, and their revenues like just grew multi-fold. So here's an example of a really popular website that you guys know of, how they incrementally, over the years, I think this process took them maybe 5 or 6 years to find their product market fit. Yes, they had a pretty good fit in the first one, but they had even better in the second and even better in the third one, right? Which is what made them like one of the best, you know, shoe buying experiences on the web.
This podcast is made possible by Optimizely. To learn more about how you can get started with progressive delivery and experimentation, visit www.optimizely.com.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.